Welcome back. It's 6 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly citizen, investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, once again drafted into duty here to be the media. They pulled me out of my office, out from behind the keyboard, pulled me out here once again to be the broadcast media, broadcasting live from Burbank here for the next night or two as the Malloys are off on vacation. I will be rejoined momentarily by Tommy Christopher of Mediaite, who was kind enough to stick around just to reset the story as quickly and as clearly as I can here. Tommy had written a story in the middle of the entire Wienergate silliness, in my opinion, silliness, concerning a couple of high school girls on Twitter who were believed to have had inappropriate contact of some nature with Anthony Weiner, and then it turned out they actually didn't. They said they were being harassed by a bunch of right wingers. And then what we learned over the weekend, and Tommy Christopher wrote about this, and what we learned over the weekend was that, in fact, these girls, Betty and Veronica, as Tommy Christopher had called them, were actually fake personas. We don't actually, to this day, know who they were, if they were a single person. Betty and Veronica and Betty's mom all may have been the same person, and Tommy actually had done some, you know, pretty good due diligence to make sure that they were who they said they were. Where they ended up sending him, or this one person, ended up sending him driver's licenses, photo IDs, which turned out to have been fake. Their names were fake. This all came out over the weekend. But in that same story, Tommy Christopher put forward a pretty full-throated defense of Andrew Breitbart. He felt that Breitbart had been unfairly maligned in this particular story. And the reason that I wanted to have Tommy on to talk about this was because, listen, I don't give a damn about Andrew Breitbart. I really don't. I cover him, and I was the one, for folks who don't know, who probably made more noise than anyone last year for about 6 months about the phony Acorn videos that Andrew Breitbart ran of James O'Keefe's. The ones where James O'Keefe never dressed up as a pimp, never posed as a pimp, told everyone he did, told them they were running a child prostitution investigation of Acorn. Just appalling. Ended up bringing down a four-decade-old community organization that had provided important services to low- and middle-income people, had signed up millions of low- and middle-income people to participate in their own democracy. And the only reason I even highlight Andrew Breitbart and his lies is because I don't believe that the media should be giving his lies, his stories, which are now proven to be lies, over and over the kind of airtime and the kind of credibility that he's been granted. In fact, he went on CNN, Andrew Breitbart did, and talked about, quote-unquote, relationships that Congressman Weiner was having with women, young women, who claimed to have relationships with him, girls that are quite young, younger than the girl in question here, when they were talking about a 21-year-old girl. Completely inappropriate, and for him to say that, for CNN, shame on them for allowing Breitbart on the air to do that. And then a few days later, Tommy Christopher wrote this article about Betty and Veronica, and said that Breitbart has acted responsibly throughout. He said this time and again in the article. Andrew treated the documentation presented to him with circumspection and so forth. I believe that you were wrong to defend Andrew Breitbart. I don't believe that he was acted responsibly throughout. And to this day, I don't believe we have evidence on the record of inappropriate behavior with girls that are quite young, younger than the girl in question here who was 21. And so Tommy was defending his point there, and I wanted to hold him over because we ran out of time. And I want to, Tommy, give you plenty of time to respond to that charge that I'm making here, because I know you have been critical of Breitbart in the past, and that's why I was so disappointed to see you fall for his latest scam.
Well, I'm glad that you thought enough of me to be able to be disappointed, first of all.
I'm not kidding, Tommy.
I know. I'm just, you know me.
Okay.
I'm joking.
Okay.
And you also mentioned that Colby Hall is listening, and if he is, I'd like to ask you, Brad, for your permission, to try and get Colby to rename Mediaite.com the Tommy blog. Would that be all right with you?
I don't think I understand that joke, but it's fine with me. It would certainly be a better name than Mediaite.
But... The Brad blog has inspired me.
Oh, there you go. All right.
Tommy blog would be an awesome name for us, right?
I'd be in favor of it.
All right, thank you.
I've already registered it. Yeah, go ahead.
Specifically to the comment he made on CNN, when I heard about that comment at that time, I might have even made a comment about it, but I did think at the time that it was an irresponsible, maybe a yellow thing to say. But, you know, now looking back in hindsight, I don't really feel exactly that way anymore. I feel like if you and I disagree about this conversation with this 17-year-old girl in Delaware, but at the time, you know, I probably would have agreed with that. And I will say that he was speaking about facts, not in evidence. And you're right, that's on CNN for not challenging that, for not saying, well, look, you can't just say that without showing some evidence of it.
And I have to say, Tommy, I have to say there's facts that are not in evidence regarding the 17-year-old that you're talking about. You're filling in a lot of holes. You're making a lot of guesses. But there is not evidence at this time that there was an inappropriate relationship between Wiener and a 17-year-old girl in Delaware. And for you to say that, to imply that, because you think that was the case without having the evidence, yes?
Well, look, Brad, you know, there are different burdens of proof. There are different, of course, obviously, you know, there wasn't enough there for him to be charged criminally. The police have apparently not, chosen to investigate further. But I found the evidence convincing. I am convinced. And like I said, you know, if it was my daughter, I'd be stomping his nuts right now.
Cape and tights stuff. I was large and in charge. You feel that was inappropriate to talk to this 17-year-old girl that way. And they're
even on its own, I would have been.
Wow.
I would have gone to his house.
Okay.
But given that he used the same line on this sexting buddy, I have no doubt. I'm convinced.
He had used "Hello, how are you" on his sexting buddy, and then said "Hello, how are you" on this 17-year-old girl, that too would be evidence that he had an inappropriate relationship with her, right?
Well, no, Brad, because you know if you look at the way that he used the overture with the other, I mean, look, I don't want to get into the weeds on this. I agree with you, Brad. I think it's a silly story. I do think, you know. The only thing I think that makes it not silly is, you know, the tweet that he sent to that girl about the cape and tights and whatnot, that was the last thing he sent, and it was the day before this whole story broke. Now, I would have, you know, it would have been interesting to see what would have happened next.
You're making inferences about that story that I think are inappropriate, Tommy.
Well, I'm sorry. Well, I'm not really sorry, but I'm sorry that you feel that way.
Okay.
I find it convincing. If you want, we can discuss more. I don't really want to get into the weeds on it because I agree with you. It's kind of a silly story. I'd much rather be talking about gun control right now.
Well, listen.
Two weeks ago, the Al Qaeda spokesman said, terrorists to exploit the gun show loophole, and nobody's doing anything about it. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
The president's not doing anything about it. And that bothers me.
Yeah,
and
good.
I'd much rather be talking about that than Wiener.
Well, no, I would too, but the problem is that this creep, this punk Breitbart, keeps coming up with this crap, these lies, and, tearing people, destroying people, destroying characters with out-and-out lies. And, instead what happens is we end up spending, 3 weeks, a month, on the garbage that he brings forward. No crimes were committed, as far as I know, concerning Anthony Wiener, and yet we've spent the last month talking about it because this guy Breitbart has been given credibility, and he stands up before the media and he says, show me one provable lie I have ever told. Well, here's a provable lie. He wrote in his own Washington Times column that James O'Keefe and Hannah Giles came to my office to show me video of him and Hannah going to the Baltimore offices of Acorn, dressed as a pimp and a prostitute, and asking for and getting help for various illegal activities. That was a complete and utter lie, and it is provable, and nobody calls him on this. And worse than that, they go out and they give him credibility, and in your case, you actually apologized for him going out and calling somebody essentially a child molester on CNN. So where does it stop, Tommy?
Well, hold on. That's not true. I didn't. I specifically said in that story that I wasn't referring to any statements that he made anywhere. I was referring to just to the evidence that was presented to him, to the releasing of documentation, which, I kind of still stand by that, although I do think that, that when he said that, you know, he had that picture of Wiener, the X-rated one that got out on the Opie and Anthony show, I thought he was essentially blackmailing Wiener, saying, you know, if you come after me, then I'm going to release this picture. I thought that was irresponsible.
Did you write about that in one of your stories?
No.
You wrote a 5-page story singing the praises of Andrew Breitbart.
Yeah. Well, I think you're overselling it, Brad. But I get it. Look, and I understand, you know, there are legitimate criticisms to be made of Andrew Breitbart. I don't agree with every single one you've made, but there are legitimate criticisms to be made. And there are even legitimate criticisms to be made in this case. But I feel like this is the wrong battle because in the final analysis, all anybody's going to remember is, you know, Wiener was guilty, Breitbart broke the story, that's it. Now, you know, I feel like, you know, if people really wanted to get on Breitbart, like, you know, this thing that James O'Keefe did, mm-hmm. Abby Boudreau, the CNN reporter, you remember that?
Sure, of course I did. Of course I did.
All right, now Breitbart, at the time, he sort of did the right thing. He sort of denounced it. You know, but then when O'Keefe wrote a statement saying, "Oh no, we weren't going to do that," Breitbart was like, "Okay, well, I believe him."
He still protects him, Tommy.
That's what I'm saying. He's Mr. Show Me the Video, and yet O'Keefe provides no evidence that he had called the thing off. There's a ton of evidence that showed that he was going to do it,
uh-huh.
And he had a boat full of cameras.
Of course.
Breitbart just takes his word for it.
Okay.
Now, there's something I think people should have hammered him for.
Right. He should be hammered for... He should be hammered for all of this, Tommy, and I don't mean to cut you off. I'm just coming up against the break, and we're short on time. He should be hammered on all of this stuff, all of these lies. And, by the way, if you want a scoop, it's yours. Coby Hall is listening. I think this is a scoop. You know all of those videos that made Breitbart's career the first day he opened BigGovernment.com, where he ran videos on Acorn saying they had a prostitution scam, child prostitution at Acorn, Acorn prostitution scandal, prostitution investigation, all of which was complete and utter BS. All of those videotapes. Guess what? I went to find them over today on BigGovernment.com because they were full of absolute lies that were never corrected. Guess what? They're all gone. They have all been removed from BigGovernment.com with no explanation, no apology, no correction, no nothing. They are gone, much as Acorn, the 4-decade-old community organization that helped poor people, millions of them in this country. So there's a scoop. Go find out why the hell he removed that information, that crap, those lies that took down a 4-decade-old community organization. Tommy, did I give you a fair shake? Because I still like you, actually, but I wanted you to explain this because I think you ought to spend a 5-page story detailing how Andrew Breitbart has lied to the world and, frankly, lied to you. Did he give you the names of Betty and Veronica, by the way? Was he the one who pointed you towards them?
No, actually, some of the information that I got from them, I gave to Breitbart. Information that did pan out and that ended up being useful to both of us. So, no, he didn't. I don't know where the... do you still have a couple seconds?
I got just about 30 seconds best, yeah.
That's right. No, you know what? Let's do this again sometime, though. Let's talk about something important like this gun show loophole. I think it's ridiculous that we can't get that thing closed.
I do, too.
I saw a poll of something like 70% of NRA members.
Yeah.
Think it should be closed. So why?
Yeah.
Why is the president not hammering this down the Republicans' throats? Why are, you know, people like Joe Manchin running around pretending that they love guns so much that has anything to do with the gun show loophole?
I,
why,
I hear you, brother, and I'm coming up against the break here. I hear you, brother. Perhaps if Meteorite ran half as many stories on the gun show loophole or half as many stories on the criminal, yes, criminal behavior of Clarence Thomas, who has a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. Hey, Kobe Hall, go check out the story. It's at bradblog.com. Feel free. You can repost it at Meteorite. If you guys covered that as much instead of this Breitbart crap, maybe we would get somewhere. Tommy, I do appreciate your time here, though, and we will do it again. Tommy right, Christopher from Mediaite.com. Brad, in from Malloy. Stay with us.
Thanks to you, I'm much obliged. Such a pleasant stay.
I said before the before we went to a break there that the Acorn videos over at biggovernment.com had been taken down. In fact, the URLs have been changed for some reason. I don't know if the articles have been or not. There is a page called biggovernment.com/acorn that lists all of these fake videos of James O'Keefe's. All of those URLs are broken. However, Meredith Dake, who is the producer of a radio show by one of Andrew Breitbart's employees, Larry O'Connor, tweets to say that they were there. You mean these posts? And she points me to a couple of them. In fact, they do appear to be there. I don't know if they were changed or not, because transparency is not a big thing when it comes to biggovernment.com. I believe that one of them used to say, they're all called, you know, things like Acorn Child Prostitution Investigation. Despite the fact there is no child prostitution that has anything to do with Acorn. Another one claimed that an Acorn worker out in, I think it was Santa Barbara or somewhere, had said that she killed her husband. They didn't bother to post a correction about that. Anyway, we're happy to correct the record. The videos are still there. Whether they've been changed or not, I can't tell you. And I don't know why they've changed the URLs on them, but there you go. All right, Richard Averitt coming up right after this. You're listening to Brad on the Mike Malloy Show. We got that out of our system, right? My thanks again to Tommy Christopher of Mediaite for coming on and coming into the no spin zone. yeah, thanks, Tommy. At least you had the courage to show up. O'Keefe, James O'Keefe, I've been inviting him to come on out, and since he I saw that he spoke with my friend Nicole Sandler over the weekend at the Netroots Nation, where he and Breitbart showed up. And welcome back, by the way, all of you folks from Netroots Nation. Hope you made it home safely, and hope you used enough disinfectant to wipe that Breitbart right off you. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. And coming up momentarily, author Richard Averitt will be joining us. But, okay, did I finish with that? Yeah, okay. I hated to even bother you with all of that stuff, but as long as the media keeps giving credibility to these people who have none, I mean, what the hell do you have to do to get the media to no longer pay attention to you? Oh, I know. Be a progressive. Be a non-right-winger. That's sure to make them not pay attention to you. Pay attention to what we've been reporting about the crimes of Clarence Thomas and his lies for 20 years that would have knocked out any Democratic-appointed justice on the Supreme Court by now. Pay attention to what we've been reporting for years on end about your electoral system and how it affects people both on the right and on the left. How e-voting undermines democracy because we, the people, can't oversee our own votes and the way our own votes are counted. And yes, you know, I've gone out and I've defended folks like Joe Miller up in Alaska, who had no reason to have faith in the results of that election last November, that U.S. Senator election. I've defended Doug Hoffman up there in New York 23, Conservative Party Doug Hoffman, when it seems that he got screwed by the optical scan systems in New York. I went to bat for Steve Smith, the conservative Supreme Court justice down in Texas, who ran in 2006 with e-voting systems across the entire state of Texas and in Winkler County, where he had received where he had won by 74% back in 2002. And 63% in 2004. In 2006, Steve Smith, the conservative Supreme Court justice, lost by 100%. He received zero votes in Winkler County. This is not about right and left. These things are about right and wrong. And, you know, if pretenders like James O'Keefe and Andrew Breitbart, liars and con men like that, were actually the citizen investigative journalists they pretended to be, I would be all for them. But they're not. They're liars and they're con men, and apparently they're cowards, because O'Keefe would not come on despite my several invitations to him. But, oh, well, that's no surprise. Okay, then, changing gears, let's go. Richard Averitt is the author of Imagine Politique, a new book in which yours truly, Brad Friedman, seems to appear as a fictional character. Yeah, really. We'll tell you about it in a second. Richard Averitt has worked in the private and public sectors as an advocate for regional cooperation and for environmental and fiscal sustainability. He has started several statewide organizations, currently serves as executive director for two public agencies. After four decades of being consumed with issues of policy, governance, and ideology, Richard realized that he was left politically homeless by the Republican and Democratic parties.
Sounds familiar.
Imagine Politique, emerges from those years of frustration, finally to find his political voice and home. Imagine Politique is his first novel, a political thriller, combining lessons from local government and the reality of hardball national politics at its worst. That's saying a lot. Richard Averitt, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thank you, Brad.
Sorry, I had to throw my fit there for a few minutes, but
you've got me worked up.
I got you worked up? Good. you can take over from here because I'm exhausted. Listen, so Imagine Politique, American Democracy, Politics in Crisis. I show up, this Brad Friedman guy seems to show up in Chapter 4, but before we get up into why I am in this fictional story as a fictional character, give us the broad picture, Richard. What does Imagine Politique concern in a broad stroke, and then we'll get to why the hell I show up in the story?
Sure. It deals with a third-party progressive candidate that has finally had it with the two dominant parties and launches a bid, and the major parties ignore him until it's too late. And then they try to minimize him as best they can. But in the end, this story actually starts election night, when he's declared the winner of the election.
And the independent progressive party candidate declares victory.
And then, as you said, this fictional character, Brad Friedman, as an advisor to the campaign, and he does a post-mortem on the election the next day and discovers that electronic voting appears to have been flipped in Georgia in 20 precincts. And it appears to be the Republicans have tried to flip votes from the Democrat to the Republican. and in the process denied the Democrat the electoral votes that Georgia would have given this candidate, the Democratic candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows President-elect Barrett, our progressive candidate,
mm-hmm.
To win the election. So it's one of many crises that happen in the 75 days between election night and January 20th, the swearing-in date,
mm-hmm.
where the...
Before you move ahead there, this was what actually drew me to this story when you told me about it and you reached out and you said, hey, I got this character that I based on you, Brent. This great, great ethical dilemma where you've got, as you said, this was in the state of Georgia where folks listening in Georgia, and this is Mike Malloy territory out there in Atlanta, across the entire state of Georgia, they use 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting machines, that there is absolutely no way, no evidence exists to show that any vote ever cast on one of those machines in the state of Georgia during an election for any candidate or any initiative on the ballot was ever recorded as per the voter's intent. These touchscreen machines can be flipped in such a way that you have no idea who really won and who really lost. And so the meat, the center of this story, at least in as much as the Brad Friedman character is concerned, involves the vote being flipped by the Republicans from the Democrats to the Republicans, which means the Republican wins Georgia, and this gives the progressive third-party candidate a way to win. And I guess you've got my character there, the fictional Brad Friedman, informing the president-elect about what happened, and the question is, well, what does he do about it? Does he tell the world and risk losing the presidency? It's a really, really cool little ethical puzzle you've created there, Richard Averitt.
Well, thank you. And what he does is they have internal discussions, which are in the book, about the various outcomes that could happen, various strategies that they could use. And for anyone who's been watching presidential politics for at least the last 11 years,
mm-hmm.
will recognize many of the scenarios that they talk about, including throwing it to the Supreme Court or throwing it to lower courts, then to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing it into the House of Representatives. But what Barrett does, our president-elect, is he confronts it, and he says, this is what we've been campaigning about. This is our issue. It appears to be flipping.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about that. We should demand, as a democracy, that every vote is counted as the person intended it to count.
Mm-hmm.
And we should no longer tolerate this situation from ever happening again. But can anyone prove that it did happen? No, they can't prove it because there's no audit trail. And so it really proves one of our campaign pledges, but it, of course, gives plenty of ammo for discrediting and further denigrating the president-elect and various moves by the Democrats and Republicans. Nobody wants this outcome. The major parties don't want this progressive
mm-hmm.
because he's actually pledging to do what he said he was going to do, which is, I know it's entirely fictional.
That's a problem, but, right? Yeah, no wonder it's fiction.
but both the corporations and there's quite a amount of attention dealt with Wall Street and its reaction to the election and how it tries to pull the strings to make sure that this problem goes away or is addressed in some way,
mm-hmm.
even if Barrett actually gets into the White House. They're already planning how they can set him up for failure. And so what he does is he confronts it the very next day,
right?
And talks about it in the media, and and then the world seems to crash around him.
And don't give any more of that than that away for the moment. Speaking with Richard Averitt, author of Imagine Politique, who has managed to somehow put a fictional Brad Friedman into the president-elect's inside team, which, of course, just to give you an idea how fictional this story is, that any president-elect would have me anywhere near them. It was actually funny. There's a few inside jokes here about how, gosh, we should have listened to Brad Friedman and Representative Holt, who didn't go far enough in his election reform bill. So election integrity folks, I think, will enjoy this. Actually, I'm going to hold this question until after the break because I got to take a quick break here, Richard Averitt. But I wanted to find out what drew you to this idea of electronic voting machine failure at the center of this, kicking off at least this story. And do you think something like this actually could happen? Is this what you fear? It certainly is my worst nightmare. All right, we're going to be back with Richard Averitt in a moment. Going to take a quick break here. And then next hour, by the way, your calls all night long. You can get into get in the line now, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Brad Friedman speaking with Richard Averitt. Go check out Imagine Politique at imaginepolitique.net. Stay with us. More straight ahead. Who's gonna steal the show? You know, baby, it's the guitar man. He can make you love, he can make you cry. He will bring you down, he will get you high. And something keeps him going.
Look for the bare necessities, simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities of Mother Nature's recipes that bring the bare necessities of life wherever I wander.
Now, Tony Sorrentino, our engineer, is just trying to cheer me up. I thank you, Tony. That's very good. Bare necessities, indeed. Brad Friedman on the Mike Malloy Show. Glad you could join us here tonight as the sun is setting on the West Coast. And we're speaking with Richard Averitt, author of the new book, Imagine Politique. That seems to, it has a cameo appearance by me, sort of, a fictional Brad Friedman. You can get more information on the book at our website, bradblog.com, where you can also jump into the chat, by the way. Lively chat room going on there now. And let's see, imaginepolitique.net. Okay. And you can call us 877-520-1150 if you have any thoughts along the way. I'm going to try to take a whole bunch of calls in the next hour. So now's your time to jump in. Don't be waiting till the end. We had these people last Friday. Some right-wingers called. I love talking to you. You're a right-winger? You want to call? Call in. I'm happy to hear from you. But don't wait until the last minute, because then I can't talk to you to hear, as we did at the very end of the show, how George W. Bush did find WMD in Iraq. After all, he found pieces of tubes. That was what we were told at the end of last week's show by a right-winger. Pieces of tubes. Those were the WMD. I guess they were going to bop us over the head with them or something. Anyway, Richard Averitt joins us. Okay, Richard, so your book, Imagine Politique, seems to take off actually from somewhere around, it looks to me like it's sort of prior to the 2008 election, because we've got a right-winger in office who looks and sounds a whole lot like George W. Bush. He's got a vice president who looks and sounds a whole lot like Dick Cheney. And the question of where we are going from here, and there's a Democratic majority in the House. Was this sort of conceived in the wake of, in the precursor to the 2008 election?
Yes, it was, Brad. There were a lot of things happening during that time. If you remember, impeachment being taken off the table, that meant a lot to me. That signaled something significant to me, that there was going to be probably no post-election holding accountable for the things that had happened under the Bush administration. And even when the Democrats got control of the House, there was and the Senate, there was no meaningful election reform. And so in answer to the question right before the break, you said, why put this election piece in there, the election fraud in there? And it's because I didn't see it being addressed by the party that should have learned a huge lesson with the 2000 election and some of the election in 2004.
Right.
And as you were mentioning, the one in Texas in 2006.
Right.
There's just and we've seen it again in Wisconsin. But what is happening at the national level on elections? Not a whole lot. And so it can happen again. It will happen again. And I wanted to make that a central point, that we can't allow our politicians to bypass or sweep this problem under the rug every time there's an election. And who's standing up for us? You know,
nobody. You know, nobody, Richard. I mean, that's the problem. Nobody is.
Well, yeah. You look at things like the environment and how many people. Every survey shows that people are for the environment. They will pay more for the environment. They'll pay more for goods. They'll buy organic if it's reasonably close. But nothing happens. We still have pesticide use rampant. We're still authorizing chemicals that we don't even test yet.
Mm-hmm.
We test them after a disaster. And so we're not being listened to. And one of the points that this book, I hope, makes is that all these plots and subplots and dramas that go on, there's an ultimate poison pill that a democracy has to use. And I'm not talking about the Second Amendment rights.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the right of protest. And
let me, you know what,
go ahead.
Richard, let me leave that there. Let me leave folks hanging because I got a break at the top of the hour, and I'm going to use this to encourage folks to go check out Imagine Politique. It has to do with a lot more than just elections and election fraud. It has to do with a third-party presidential candidate actually standing up against the Republicans and the Democrats alike. It is a political thriller with twists and turns, and it's also my worst nightmare in many ways, as I say on the back of the book. Richard Averitt, thank you, sir. ImaginePolitique.net. Much more.
Thank you, Brad.
You betcha. Much more on the Molloy Show straight ahead. We'll have the link at BradBlog.com, too. Stay with us.